Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Sharp contrast is what is happening on campuses around the United States. And my sense is that we are in the final confrontation in the space, because we don't seem to be seeing it at other campuses, unless perhaps they are watching Columbia to see how this plays out. What is happening there? Well, of course, we know that there is the story of Mahmoud Khalil. Who is he? And what is all of this about? Professor Richard Landis. He's an Israeli historian, he's an author, and he joins us this morning. Professor, first of all, Chag Purim Sameach. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
I am good, thank you. So give us, for anybody who isn't familiar with what has happened here in the story, tell us about, give us a synopsis.
Well, so, I mean, I don't know how far back to go, but, you know, this fellow has been, he's allegedly a Palestinian born in Syria amongst refugees, came to America, got a green card, studied at Columbia, graduated, and was still on campus when he was detained.
Right.
But in the meantime, during the protests, shall we call them, at Columbia, he was a major player in organizing some of the most violent of these protests, building takeovers, and so on. And so the United States government revoked his green card and has detained him. Now, on the one hand, you have a whole bunch of people screaming free speech. How can you do this?
Right.
And on the other hand, you have people like Brooke Goldstein saying this is not about free speech. This is about conduct. And he is engaged in conduct that violates the conditions of his green card. And the United States has every right to detain him. They have to have a hearing to show that he engaged in this activity. But and they will have to, and if they don't have evidence of his misconduct as opposed to his use of free speech, no matter how vile, no matter how openly supportive of Hamas's genocidal program it is, he does have that right to free speech.
Right.
What's interesting to me about this whole issue is the way in which you have a kind of chorus of useful idiots, or I call them useful infidels, in America, who seem to feel that they show their virtue by defending down to the last detail the rights of people who are systematically abusing democracy in order to destroy democracy. There's a famous line in the Frank Herbert's Dune, in which one of the bad characters says, you know, while I'm weak, I will demand freedom from you because that's according to your principles, and when I'm strong, I will take away your freedom because that's according to my principles.
Yeah, absolutely. So the question... carry on, and then I'll get... I just keep wondering how... No, I keep wondering if... for example, the Democrats who are standing up in his defense, do they really believe what they're saying? Have they, can you have ignored who he is, how he has effectively denied other people freedom of speech by destroying classes and occupying buildings? How do they defend that? I'm finding it so hard to reconcile, because you talk about them being useful idiots, which I get, and it does make sense, but at the same time, are they so stupid?
How can you be so idiotic?
Yes, getting
first
it.
First of all, I think you have to understand that the Democrats who are defending him are people like Rashida Tlaib, who and Ilhan Omar, who are themselves
Not useful idiots; they're complicit.
Right, and no, they're more than useful idiots. They are actually, so the term that I coined back in 2001 as a result of incidents around the 9/11 bombing, in which, you know, people who were the mastermind, I forget his name right now, but he actually went to the U.S. government agricultural department and wanted to get $600,000 to buy a crop duster with outsized tanks. So he didn't tell them, but he planned to fly it over the city and spray population with poison gas.
Right.
And when he was refused, he said, "You guys are racists."
Right.
And I was, you know, I was thinking, well, what is it with people who have absolutely no respect for human rights who then invoke the values? So I came up with the term demopath.
Right.
And the point is that Rashida Tlaib is a demopath, and so is Ilhan Omar. They are working for enemies of the United States. But they know how to play the rest of the sort of, I even think liberal is the wrong term, the illiberal left.
Right.
They know how to play them in this way. The real problem, it seems to me, is that the people who, the useful idiots, are really convinced of the righteousness of their cause. So were the useful idiots during the Soviet Union. They were true believers. There's a wonderful book by a San Francisco dock worker called Eric Hoffer called The True Believer, and he goes into this mentality. It's a millennial mentality. It's a mentality that says, I am on the right path to collective salvation for the world. There's nothing better than to do this, and anything that gets in my way is the enemy. So I really do believe that they do not see that. They see these protests, they see as necessary because the forces of evil are so strong, the forces of evil being American democratic culture and universities and so on. They are so committed to the evil cause of protecting the Israelis that literally anything is permissible in order to fight this evil. So I don't think they see these things as violations of civil rights. I see the people whose civil rights are being violated shouldn't have those civil rights because they're siding even indirectly with the forces of evil.
It's almost weaponized civil rights. That is where we do need to leave it. Professor Richard Landis, thank you as always. Israeli historian and author. It is 7:30. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.